Yeah, you're just trying to get a rise out of me. Skip Bayless.
It worked. Listen, you've got to make a decision here to preserve the sanctity of our conversation about the Tweetback, okay?
It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 187. I am your host, Adam Mangum. I'm joined first by Greg Rebell of KSL to talk about the building hype around the 2015 football season and their killer September. Matt and I then talk about BYU baseball, Tyler Hawes' recent ranking on ESPN for the draft, and we talk about the hype machine and how it might affect the Cougars. We also draft teams that we would like to be put on future independent schedules. Hey, once again, this is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all your news at CougarFan.com, and you're going to listen to our podcast right now. Welcoming back to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, frequent guest and the voice of the Cougars on KSL, Greg Rebell. Welcome back to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Adam. Good to be back with you, as always.
Yeah. So, I just, we were talking before we started, I had my worst Cougar quiz, 4 for 10, but I think this week's Cougar quiz number 4 apparently is not, is one of your harder ones, or maybe the hardest so far?
Well, I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but quiz number 4 has gotten the highest scores of the of the 4 tests out so far. But there's always next week, and the week after that, and the week after that, and the week after that. There'll be 15 of these, and we're only on number 4. So,
yeah. So, how far planned out in advance are you? Do you have, you know, 3 or 4 ahead, or do you do them each week as they come?
Kind of each week as they come. I've not written next week's quiz yet. And again, 10 questions a week, 15 weeks, 150 good ones in there, I hope. And this is the second year doing it. And hopefully we can keep doing it for a while, or at least until people tire of them. But I think they're fun. And, you know, they're meant to be challenging, but not so much so that you think I'm just, you know, reaching for, you know, impossible, you know, bits of arcane knowledge.
Right.
I try and, you know, put some things in there that a casual fan will have a really good chance of getting, and some other things that might be a bit of a guess, and then some other things that require maybe some in-depth knowledge. But hopefully it's, again, kind of runs the gamut. I hear from people, you know, who you know, almost strike out, to those who are, you know, consistently in the 8, 9, and maybe even 10 out of 10 each week. So it really does kind of traverse the spectrum, but it's a fun thing. I enjoy doing it, as you know. I love stats and trivia, and this is just another outlet for me to keep things interesting and keep people thinking about football in the off season.
Yeah. Well, a couple other headlines have kept football in folks' heads so far this week, or in the last week or so. A couple of early season prognosticators picking BYU either as a borderline top 25 team, or SI.com had them within in their power poll. And also some hype regarding Taysom Hill as a Heisman candidate, which of course started last year before the season and was moving along well before his injury. Do you think this type of preseason hype will have much of an effect on this team, or do you think this veteran-laden group, this type of thing will kind of roll off them as they prepare for the season?
Yeah, I can't see it having much of an effect, but I would say that if there's a talking point for Bronco Mendenhall, it's that as much positive national attention as BYU is receiving right now, nothing has been earned to this point. And I think a lot of what people project for BYU is contingent on them having a successful September, because so much attention, justifiably so, Adam, has gone to that first month of the season. You could arguably say, or strongly, you know, make a point that BYU may have the toughest September schedule of any team in college football, because it is so rare that that a Power Five program would stack its September the way that BYU has. Of course, independence makes that a necessity. The P5 program will usually throw one good name program in September, but that's when they try and rack up those wins that get them bowl eligible by the end of the season. BYU has no such luxury, not playing in a conference. And so by visiting Nebraska, UCLA, and Michigan in the first 4 weeks of the season. And the one home game is Boise. Again, all attention reasonably goes to that first month. If BYU goes 3-1, 4-0, you're talking about the potential for one of those once every few years type of seasons. Anything else, would probably take BYU out of the NY6 mix immediately and have the Cougars again playing for those six wins just to get bowl eligible again. So there is so much riding on the first 4 weeks. Bronco knows it. Bronco acknowledges it. He knows it is a byproduct of independence, and that's the bed BYU has made for itself. But, man alive, whether you're a player, a coach, a broadcaster, you could not ask for a better start to the season. The weather will still be good, and you're talking about legendary venues week in and week out for that first month. It's really incredible.
Yeah, it's I don't know. Well, of course, the 2017 season starts off pretty well too, but certainly historically, there's not BYU hasn't had a September like this. So those two things are colliding, Greg. A little bit of hype from both maybe fans and media. Saying, well, senior quarterback, good offense. Heck, if Bronco can make anything of the defense, but the thing standing in front of all this, Greg, is that an 8-5 season, which the last few years has been below average and a disappointment to fans. 8-5 or 9-4 with this schedule, could that be considered a success because of the degree of difficulty, or is that still, do you think, in fans' mind and of course, coaches and players, is that still deemed as unacceptable even with a schedule this tough?
It'll be tough to sell a 4 or a 5 loss season as overly successful because the chances will have been there. You are playing legendary names. You're playing them in legendary venues. But you are still talking about programs dealing with either first-year coaches or quarterbacks that aren't necessarily noted nationally as among the best in the game, at least projecting into the season. So really, it is a season of great opportunity in addition to great challenge. You could argue if you're going to a bowl game with the schedule that BYU's put forth, yes, that's been a good season. I think we're splitting hairs a little bit in calling it successful or non-successful. But again, 4 or 5 losses would just seem to be a bit too many to say that that we as a team, if you're talking about BYU, fulfilled our potential. You've hit on a couple of the elements, but the offense in particular is laden with experience, especially at the key positions. Presuming the offensive line comes together and they find a core of 7 or 8 guys that can stay healthy, BYU should be expected to be among the higher scoring teams in the country. Defensively, a lot of attention, justifiably so, goes to Bronco Mendenhall taking over the play calling, and that should have an impact. From a yards per play standpoint last season, BYU's defense wasn't the sieve that a lot of people made it out to be, but it was situationally weak. BYU's defense last year at some of the most key of moments let down. And so while they would have a good first down and a good second down, that third and long invariably bit BYU in some really key occasions. And so if you want to break it down on a per-play basis, yeah, they were among one of the better defenses around, and they've been that way under Bronco for years, even though he wasn't calling plays last year. But in the most important moments, they weren't at their best, and that has to change this season. Back to your original question, I really think that you almost have to hit that standard Bronco references. And Bronco himself has put it out there, 10 wins. Double-digit wins and getting to and hopefully winning a bowl game, that's a successful season, getting into the rankings. And if BYU were to be a 3-1, 4-0 team in September, yeah, they're going to be a ranked team. They could be 1-0 and be ranked if they can win in Lincoln, for example. The opportunities are there. I just don't know that they can go 8-5 again and say, yeah, we were a success, because you are talking about some of the things you already referenced with the senior quarterback, et cetera. I think more is expected. And there are those equalizers. As much as you are going to those traditionally strong venues and legacy programs, there are some things you hope to be able to take advantage of, either first-year coaches and or coordinators at some of those places like Nebraska and Michigan to name two.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is definitely opportunities standing out there. Now,
to go back and maybe underscore a point that came out of your original question, it's tough to say you know, that going to a bowl game for, say, you know, an 11th consecutive season and winning, you know, 8 to 10 to 11 games, you know, it isn't the hallmark of a strong and successful program. And indeed, BYU is. I just think this year, with all that is laid out for the Cougars and as key as this time is, or as crucial as this time is relative to the national discussion, this would be a great time to have a great year. And I think it's possible for BYU, but to me, great is getting 10 and above, I think.
Yeah. And I think that's certainly how Bronco is measuring success. I don't think he'll be satisfied with a 4 or 5 loss season. One of the things that has come up with the scheduling, of course, is Tom Mahomo has said in recent weeks that, as he's talked about how difficult this schedule is going to be, one of the questions, of course, that always comes up is scheduling of Utah. And I heard him in an interview say, and I'm paraphrasing, but would you trade Michigan for Utah? And that's kind of the choice that that he had with some of these upcoming schedules. Do you think that that is, I mean, I think most fans, I would say, I'd rather go play in the Big House than have a game against against Utah. Do you think for the long-term health of the program that it matters how often that BYU plays Utah, or those kind of rivalry things? I mean, they're important, but in the long term, if we played them 5 out of the next 10 years, in the end, that's neither going to elevate nor sink the program.
I think I'm leaning toward the latter assessment. You know, Utah's stated preference to fill the schedule with opponents other than BYU, you know, indicates Utah's perspective on the rivalry, and BYU is, at least for the, you know for the time being, kind of forced to go along with, you know, with the wishes of the neighbors to the north. That said, BYU is also not going to bend over backwards to shoehorn a game in where it doesn't make sense for the Cougars. And if both programs agree, you know, on dates, this thing will continue to be played. But if it becomes too much of a chore, you know, I I've kind of reversed course on this, because I really believed that once it came back in 2016, it would be back to stay. I no longer feel that strongly in the positive that way. I could see this thing being a very sporadic event moving forward. And while they say absence makes the heart grow fonder, I also don't know that that's true in this instance. I almost get the sense that the 2-year break has kind of proven to both sides that, you know, maybe we don't need as much and need each other as much as we did historically. And each side could feel that way for different reasons. But I do think it's a valid point that neither side feels like it has to move heaven and earth to get this game back on the schedule. I think it would be unfortunate if it becomes, you know, so sporadic that it's once every 5 years or you know, twice every 7 or 8 or 9 years this thing is played. But I also think, too, if you know, if one side tries to play a leverage card to the extreme over the other, it will sour the other on the desire to play the game, and that's understandable.
Yeah, absolutely. As we focus back on 2015, I mean, obviously, they'll people know what to expect from Taysom Hill, at least assuming full health, and the offense has a lot of weapons and an experienced offensive line. On the other side of the ball, as you mentioned, there maybe weren't as bad statistically as they looked, especially on a per play basis. But what players, individuals, do you think have to take that next step to be more impactful playmakers in order for this defense to put together that kind of run, enable that kind of run where BYU could win 10 or 11 games?
Bronson Kafusi has to be an impact player from the defensive line, and his positional usage last year didn't really have him as a go-to line on as a go-to guy on the defensive line, because he was being moved around so much and played a lot at linebacker. But you know, this defensive line that wreaked relatively little havoc last year has to do a little more. Now, in the 3-4, you're not going to ask your defensive linemen, you know, for the kind of numbers that BYU's outside or rush linebacker, who acts as a fourth lineman at times, is going to provide. But you have to have a little more than BYU had last year. They just weren't getting what BYU's used to getting from the defensive ends in particular. And Bronson Cafusi, presuming he'll play more at end this year than at linebacker, you know, has to be that impact player. They have to get more out of the front three, even though the front three doesn't have that highlight-grabbing assignment, generally speaking. Bronson can be that guy and can be that stat-grabbing and headline-making guy at one of the end spots. So Bronson and someone have to have good years on that defensive line. At least two of those three guys have to be guys that you think, wow, we'll have a tough time doing without them if they were to go down at any given point. And the linebacking core we saw so little of in spring ball. They remain somewhat of a mystery for different reasons. You weren't seeing Manoah Pakula, Harvey Longhi, Fred Warner. Taki was involved, and that's somebody that you're really going to count on. But I don't know what Tyler Cook is going to be looking like here in August. And even Troy Hines, I don't know that I know his situation long term, whether he's an end or a linebacker. There was just too much uncertainty in the spring relative to different absences, injuries, and surgeries. That to me is going to be one of the bigger mysteries to solve in August is who really looks ready to go. A lot of folks like to point to the secondary as the big question mark, but for me, for different reasons, absence primarily, I want to see what that linebacking core does look like when camp convenes in August. And then, you know, the secondary remains kind of almost an annual concern. It almost seems like we have this conversation every year. And some years they cobble together a better group than others. But, there's just enough uncertainty there. And a lot of that, too, deals with absence during the spring to wonder what the group's going to look like in August.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's certainly a lot of questions, which we just maybe in fall camp, but really the answers will come week one against Nebraska.
Week one in terms of who's on there and not on there. You know, does Kainakua miss some time? Is it a half? Is it a game? Can Eric Takenaka fill a void? He's kind of someone that came out of nowhere in spring. Michael Davis and Jordan Prater are expected to man the corners, but Prater was again absent in spring. Just enough question marks, and as we've seen recently, BYU's had to go deep, deeper than they've been prepared to go in the secondary on more than a few occasions in recent years. And that'll again be one of Bronco's biggest challenges as a play caller, is to make sure that he is deep enough there, because the schedule you've lined up doesn't allow you a lot of leeway in that back four. I think it does help BYU that they may not be facing a murderer's row of quarterbacks, at least not, that's not the indication right now. But you want to be as at least too deep in the secondary. That could go for any position. But I know that in spring they probably didn't have the kind of depth Bronco's hoping develops in August.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Greg, thanks for coming on. We'll definitely have you on again before the season starts. As you mentioned and pointed out, this September is going to be something else, something that I think has that chance. And as a fan, all I can say is there's the chance of something special. If you're playing, a bunch of nobodies in September, you expect to win, and it's only downside. But, man, if you, like you said, if you're 3-1 or 4-0 out of September, that's what we root for, right? Something special, and that's, we have that chance this year. So
it's what happened last year, and the schedule wasn't as difficult in September, but it did feature P5 programs in Virginia and Texas, and again BYU was 4-0, and you couldn't turn on ESPN and watch their college football programming without seeing BYU as a conversation piece. And then Taysom Hill went down, and we all know what happened from there. But just last year proved just what BYU, can be and the kind of needle they can move nationally when they get off to that kind of special start. And I'll just leave you with a couple of parting thoughts this time around. One of them is football related. You may have seen my tweets about this, but the Remington Trophy watch list came out. That's for the best center in college football. They named 52 guys and didn't see fit to include T. John Caroma, who was the only true freshman in the FBS last year to start every game at center, was a freshman All-American at center, and didn't get on that list. And again, you can get too worked up over watch lists, and there are so many lists with so many guys on them, but because they do include so many guys, you wonder how Caroma got missed. And I had to go down the list and see how many sophomores were on that list. There are probably a half dozen redshirt sophomores and then one true sophomore. The true sophomore is a kid out of UConn named Ryan Crozier. Nothing against Ryan Crozier the player. But he only played in, I think, 10 games last year, started three at left guard, and only tried out center for the first time in spring ball as an experiment, according to UConn. I guess he's going to stay.
Right.
But you're talking about a sophomore experimenting at center during spring ball and taking him over a player in Tijon Kuroma, who started 13 games at center as a true freshman and became a freshman All-American. So clearly a miss by the Remington Trophy Committee on that one. I think that's you can't characterize it any other way. If you want to go to sophomores and not put in Tijon Kuroma, you're not looking closely enough. So that's a football note. Basketball, I've been around campus enough lately to see a number of the BYU players working out. Quincy Lewis is now on the staff. I've chatted with him a couple of times as well as he's getting accustomed to the program and the players and his new assignments. And you know, everyone looks good right now. But in particular, I think Corbin Kafusi, man, looks like he's done a lot of work already on this offseason with his body. And watching, you know, just a handful of moves that he can put out there in isolated workout situations, he's looking like a more confident player, even just now in the offseason. Chase Fisher and Kyle Collinsworth often work out together. They both look great, and it's tough to not get excited about already basketball next season. The Spain trip will come up soon enough, and Dave Rose will take probably 10 players with him. Who gets left home will be interesting to see. But, you know, even though we're in football, it's basketball seems to creep up, and just seeing those guys on campus and working out is exciting. And then a women's soccer note. For you as well, Adam. Thursday, BYU Women's Soccer will release its schedule for the coming season, and that'll be a fun thing to note, and you'll notice a lot of P5 presence on that schedule, and we'll also have news about expanded coverage plans on the radio side that I'll be involved with as well for the women's soccer program. And so a lot of exciting things to look forward to at BYU these days, even though we are in the off season, things are always percolating. And so it should be a fun week and weeks to come, even though there's no games to be played for a few months.
Yeah, it should be for BYU sports fans. Next year will be fun and a lot to watch and to watch out for in a bunch of sports. So, well, Greg, thanks for coming on. We appreciate your perspective as always, and we'll have you on again soon before the season starts.
Always appreciate the invitation, and wish you the best until we talk again. Thanks, Adam.
CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast, Matt. What's up, dude?
Hey!
Now, Matt, there's something we need to talk about, and it's quite serious.
Do we ever handle anything that isn't serious on
this
show?
Yeah, it's serious all the time around here. We don't joke around. There's no joking. So
no time for levity.
No time for levity. No time for shenanigans or tomfoolery.
No, we've moved past all of those things.
Yes, we've moved past all of those things. But luckily we have a one Mr. Skip Bayless to keep us all grounded, Matt. To keep us remembering the important things.
What would we do without Skip? Sometimes when I'm in a tough situation, I ask myself, what would Skip Bayless do?
And then you do the opposite. Skip Bayless, now everyone's probably seen and heard this, but Stephon Curry has his cute little daughter come in during the post-game press conference, right? We're recording this on Wednesday night. This was Tuesday night after NBA Western Conference Finals Game 1. Cute girl gets up there, you know, she's being a 2-year-old, 3-year-old girl, however old she is, you know. Skip Bayless then goes on a massive rant, Matt, and I'm going to quote some of Skip, because you want it straight from the horse's mouth.
you just called him a horse.
There's another word I don't think we could say on the show that I think is more appropriate, but straight from the horse's mouth, okay? This is what he says, among other things. Steph had a job to do. Journalists are on a tough deadline. They need their quotes, and they need to feed their sound or their tape to write their stories. They need quick quotes from Steph about what is happening and the fascinating conclusion to a game. I watched the end of that game. The conclusion was not that fascinating, by the way. I'm not sure he actually watched the game. But this is the kicker, Matt. After a while, I have no idea what Steph said, and I badly wanted to hear what he had to say. Oh. He wanted to hear what he had to say.
Oh, did you miss out on something, Skip?
Yeah, it got completely disrupted by little Riley stealing the show. It really hurt the process of journalists getting their quotes from Steph. I don't hate children. I'm not an ogre. I don't know about the hating children, but technically he is an ogre.
And listen, anytime somebody says, I don't hate children, or I don't hate whatever. Like anytime somebody prefaces a comment with that phrase, guess what it means?
They probably hate that.
They actually do hate that.
Yes, yes. So then this is the best part, Matt, where he keeps us all to remember what's important. The NBA is going to have to make a call to preserve the sanctity of the post game. What is he talking about? The deadlines? Like, who's on a deadline? What is this? What are we worried about, the print newspaper business? I'm pretty sure, Skip Bayless, it's dead. Like, you know, if anybody wants to see the Steph Curry quotes, they go on YouTube and watch the presser, right? Or they read the game story that can be updated electronically.
At any time.
This is what gives all of us who try to, like, banter about sports a terrible name, is he is trying to make something of absolute, and take the contrary part, because heaven forbid a sports writer have a hard time getting a quote.
Well, the other crazy thing about it is it's so, like, it's so misplaced. The whole concept of we're all here, and this game was, it's almost as if he, in his Skip Bayless's world, the game was played in order to produce a quote.
Yes, yes.
And the entire evening is supposed to culminate in this event called the post-game presser.
Yes.
And, it's just, it's crazy talk.
And what's Curry going to say? Well, you know, the Rockets are a good team, and but, you know, we made a few more shots than they did, and Harden's a great player. You know, he'll come back and get us in game two. You know what I mean? I could make up the quotes now, and I'd probably have about an 85% chance of landing exactly on what he would have said.
Yep.
So just throw those in your story. The sanctity of I'm worried about the sanctity of this podcast, quite honestly.
I think Riley Curry has ruined this episode of the podcast.
They're done. We might as well just stop.
I'm totally distracted now.
Yes, I'm absolutely distracted.
And Skip Bayless made a reference to the terrible twos, but listen, for a two-year-old, I thought she did pretty good.
Well, I saw another, I don't remember who, some other journalist basically saying, and I think he was joking, it was just a bad joke, that Stephen Curry's not a very good father, can't control his kid. I hope the guy was joking, because I got to say, like, that is clearly someone who hasn't spent a lot of time around small children, right? Like, what was he going to do? Like, just, you expect a two-year-old to do exactly what their parents say?
Listen,
go that.
Listen, if there is one group of people that is more irrational than Skip Bayless when he talks about things like this, it is two-year-olds. Okay, like there's no logic required here. But at the same time, she was asking some very legitimate questions.
Yes.
And making some very legitimate comments. She was ready for the post-game presser to end.
Yes. Yes, she was ready for it to end. So
Steph Curry was probably ready for it to end.
Yes, I think he probably was. And Skip Bayless apparently was not.
No, because that is the event. That is what we've all come to see.
Yes, and we need to know what he thought about the somewhat boring last 90 seconds of that game.
Yeah, that game had been decided for the last couple minutes.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, Matt, let's move on to Cougar news. Let's keep it serious.
Cougars in the news!
CougarFan.com, Cougar News. Catch all of the best and brightest. Best and brightest? That doesn't even make any sense. Catch all the best news at CougarFan.com, your source for all Cougar news. Now, Matt, BYU baseball on Monday night had a victory. Even though they were the home team, it was in California against St. Mary's. Extra innings victory. And they had already qualified for the WCC tournament, but this bumped them up to the third seed. So they start, we're recording this, I think I mentioned that already, on Wednesday night. They begin on Thursday against somebody. Santa Clara? Who is it? It doesn't matter. But they didn't have to play San Diego, the best team in the tournament, in the first game. So they have not been to the NCAA tournament in quite a long time.
Yeah, wouldn't that be pretty cool?
That would be cool. It would be very cool. And you can catch those games on the WTV, the WCC TV channel, and on BYU Radio.
It will and be so the Cougars are Thursday night.
Thursday night, yes.
It shows up, for me, it's showing up in Central Time, but it's Thursday night against Pepperdine.
Yeah, Thursday, I think 10 Eastern, I believe, mm-hmm. is the start time on that one. So congratulations to them, and hopefully we'll be hearing more about that. Matt, in other news NBA related, we'll go back to the NBA, and we're going to talk about the sanctity of the NBA draft.
How about the sanctity of the lottery?
How about the Minnesota Timberwolves, huh?
Turns out tanking doesn't quite get you there, does it?
Does it, New York Knickerbockers?
Oh, that's too bad, Knicks.
Oh, my gosh. Did you see Kobe's reaction? What a freaking tool. He's an absolute tool. I'm sorry, Laker fans, he is. Okay, just be okay with it. He's one of the best players ever and a tool. So,
and those two things can be true.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know if he was at the time, but it turns out that unfortunately so is Michael Jordan, you know.
Yeah. Yep, turns out he kind of is.
He saw his Hall of Fame bitterness speech. So Chad Ford at ESPN.com, an insider article, had Tyler Hawes ranked 88th of the top 100 NBA prospects going into the draft. Matt, I'm not really good at math, but I pretty much think that's he's saying he won't go drafted.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm going to go ahead and just skip even doing the math here. But I think when you look at Chad Ford's projections, the label on that is second round pick / undrafted.
Yeah.
And that's the label on a lot of the picks around him. I don't think, and when you look at the players that are down in that range, I mean, these are not draft pick players.
Yeah, and this does not mean he won't play in the NBA. But I'll tell you what, I think he's got a long road ahead of him. I think he's much more likely at this point to play in Europe. Which, you know, again, I understand why there are doubts about his ability to play in the NBA. The positives listed by Chad Ford: tough, do it all, wing, excellent shooter with deep range, pesky defender. I think that's translation for not the greatest defender. Lacks ideal size and athleticism for the position, though. So, and I think by size they actually mean muscle mass, not height. 6'5", I think, is fine. But I think
how about old for his class?
Old for his, I don't know what that means. Like, there are other guys on this list that are 23 and 24. I mean, I get it. A lot of those guys at the top of the list, right? Towns is what, 19, Okafor's 19. I mean, the first six picks in the draft may all be under 20. But there are guys that are going to get drafted who are in their early 20s. I don't think that's the big deal. I think the most Jazz thing to do, because they've got the 13th pick, is Sam Decker.
Oh, Sam Decker almost looks like he belongs on the Jazz.
I think he does. Or Kaminsky. I don't know. He's 22. That's kind of old for the class.
Frank Kaminsky. That's pretty old. What pick do the Jazz have again?
I think it's 13. So we'll see.
Oh man, they according to these, I mean, they're right in the range.
So would you pick Towns or Okafor first?
Oh, that's tough, but I think I'd take Okafor.
I'd take Towns, but I think being in that second spot is the best spot to be in, because it's clearly 1-2, right? Or 1A, 1B. And you just take whoever comes to you. You don't have
that's
to
right.
make a choice.
So if it goes south for you, everybody's going to be talking about the other pick.
Yes, yes, exactly. You just, I mean, you had to make the pick you were going to make, because that's who fell to you. Now,
and you probably have to take Towns with the number one pick. You probably have to, but I don't, tough.
Yeah, I think you can take either. I mean, I think that most people have Towns number one, but I find it funny because I'm here in Minneapolis area, and there's some local talk radio guys that want them to pick D'Angelo Russell, who's a great NBA prospect. I'm not, but you cannot pass on Towns or Okafor to take It is kind of a point guard league now, but gosh, I think you got to pick one of those two guys. But we'll
what
see.
What about Kristaps Porzingis?
I know nothing about him. You know, those foreign guys, typically, I mean, I guess I could go on YouTube and probably watch highlights, but, you know, those are the kind that who knows where they'll go. Him and the kid from Croatia, I mean, they could go anywhere from, like, top five to, you know, maybe slip out of the top ten. We'll see. We shall see. Now let's move on to one last bit of news that affects the Cougars, not directly Cougar related. Now a 30-second shot clock, Matt. Do you care?
Kinda. I don't know how much impact the 30-second shot clock is really gonna have. I don't know that that's gonna do a whole ton to change the pace of the game. I think that for the most part, I don't see that impacting a lot of. I don't see that making a huge impact with the shot clock that length.
Yeah. So if you look at say go back to 1991, we talked about this during the tournament about how cool of a season that was, right? And you look at scoring then was a lot higher than it is today. How long was the shot clock then? 45 seconds. I mean, scoring isn't just about the shot clock. I mean, scoring will likely go up a little bit because you're going to have a few more possessions a game. But, you know, the defensive intensity that exists in college basketball now is not going to suddenly go away because you had a 30-second shot clock.
Right.
And the rules kind of favor, quite frankly, that playing physically, and they let them play physically. And, you know, they say the ratings are down. I'm not sure the ratings are down because of low scoring games as much as they are because of there's a lot of options for entertainment now. I mean, and nobody cares anymore until the tournament, unless you're a diehard. So,
well, and the 30-second shot clock isn't going to fix that.
No,
it's not going to make the regular season games any more meaningful.
No. I mean, it may make some of them a tad bit more exciting, but you're still going to have games in the 50s. Final score for both teams. It's just going to happen. So, Matt, let's talk football, because we love talking football.
Oh, yes, we do.
There seems to be some hype nationally building around the Cougars. They've either been ranked in some preseason power rankings in the top 25 or put on the list of just missed. That includes SI released theirs this week and had BYU ranked 23rd. If you had your own football power ranking, Matt, would you have BYU in the top 25? Do you think they have the proper resume?
I would not have them in the top 25. But they'd be close. They might be in my others receiving votes range. But I don't know that I'm looking at a team that would quite be that could quite get in there. And I know that some of the stuff they're looking at is you got a healthy Taysom Hill and these other factors. But you know, until I get to see what that looks like, I don't know that I would put them in there.
Yeah. See, I guess I only disagree because if you're a national guy and you see they were 4-0 and 18th in the country when Hill got hurt, you kind of say, well, they should be about the same as they were before he got hurt. So assuming Hill health, they're a top 25 team. You know, you look at some of the other teams and it's really to do preseason rankings. I mean, we're pretty sure Ohio State's going to be good. We're pretty sure Alabama's going to be good. There's another list of 8 or 9 teams that I think are pretty safe bets to finish in the top 25. After that, you're kind of making it up, right?
Would
it shock you if Michigan made the top 25 by the end of the year?
No.
Would it shock you if they didn't?
Nope.
Would it shock you if Texas A&M was a top 25 team?
Yes.
It would?
No.
You just hate them because you live in Texas now.
I don't hate them.
You hate the Aggies. Of all stripes, you hate Utah State?
I don't hate the Aggies. I just hate all their alumni.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
I'm just kidding. Fair.
No, you're not. But that's okay. We can be honest on the show. Remember, we're very serious. So Matt, does this affect the team? All this hype around them being a possible top 25 team, do you think this affects them?
You want to say that it doesn't, right? You want to hope that it doesn't, that they're focused and that they're not paying attention to this stuff, but I'm sure that it does. And so there's two different ways, I think, that this type of attention can impact a team. One of those would be they get distracted by it, they're excited about it, they think they've achieved something before they really have, and then there's some type of a letdown. But what you hope the team gets out of this type of experience is that they walk into some of these games, especially early in the season against some very quality opponents, with some swagger, with the sense of I belong here, I can compete on this level, and we're here to win a football game, and we can beat this team. We are one of the best teams in the country, and today we're going to prove that. That's the effect, if any, you hope this type of attention would have on a football team.
Yeah, that's a good point, and I think you're right. I mean, they're going to hear it. Their friends, family, who knows, are going to say something about it, right? That's just kind of how the world works. But I think with a veteran-led club, I think you're less likely to have them get... I mean, I don't think Taysom Hill's going to care one way or the other whether they're preseason ranked or not. I don't think Taysom Hill's going to care one way or the other if he's on a Heisman watch list. I don't get the impression that he cares too much about those things. Now, talking about Heisman watch lists, he has been put on some of them. Matt, do you think, okay, if he stays healthy and follows the statistical track he had been on last season, where he was completing 65% of his passes and running all over people, is he in New York for the Heisman Trophy?
A healthy full season out of Taysom Hill gets healthy, him to New York.
Full season gets him to New York.
Absolutely.
How good does the record have to be?
I think that the team's got to get... I don't know that they need 10 wins
right,
to get him there, but you're going to need close. You may need 9.
I think you need 9. I think you need 2 wins over Power 5 teams and or Boise State.
But if he can run the gamut of that schedule, putting up the statistical type of performance that you're talking about here, where he's completing in that 65% range and running all over the place, then the team will win 10 games.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a fair thing to say. I've heard people say this, and I agree with it mostly, is that he is a closer, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that you feel comfortable at the end of the game, he's going to do something. He is going to try to, he is going to help this team win. And, you know, that's not true of every quarterback. And the thing is, he can do it multiple ways, which not every quarterback can do.
You know, and I think he's going to have some good tools around him.
Yes. The offense will be fine. It'll be a top 20 offense if he's healthy. I feel pretty comfortable about that. And if that's the case, then there's a good chance they're in every game. Right?
Yep.
There's a good chance they're in every game. So, Matt, any other thoughts on the hype machine?
It's exciting, but it's still very, very early for all of this. I mean, the preseason rankings, I mean, you know, who knows, right? But it sure does help, you know, build up the anticipation for the fall.
Yes. Yeah, it absolutely does. It's kind of a fun thing, but I don't know. My anticipation for this fall is already so high. So let's go to the Twitter, to the tweet bag, Matt.
Tweet bag.
We have a question from Justin Whiting. That's at JN Whiting on Twitter. What if BYU could start 4-0, but that means Star Wars Episode 7 is delayed a year? Would you take the wins or the movie, Matt?
Oh, this isn't even a question for me. I take the wins.
I know it's not a question for you.
When is that movie coming out? I'll take the wins.
I'm sorry, what? Did you say when is that movie coming out? That's insulting.
Oh, that's
pathetic, really.
That was great.
Yeah, you're just trying to get a rise out of me, Skip Bayless.
It worked. Listen, you've got to make a decision here to preserve the sanctity of our conversation about the tweetback. Okay?
Yes, that's true. That's true. I do need to make a decision about that. That's a good point. I would also take the wins just because I've been waiting for a long time for a new Star Wars movie, and I could wait another year.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that, right, you, in this scenario, you still get the movie, right?
Correct.
But if you take the film release now,
you don't get the
wins. Don't get this schedule again.
No, you don't get the wins. So I'm with you, man.
You've got to take the wins.
Yeah, I think you got to take the wins.
The force, Matt, is strong with this one.
Also from the tweet bag, Todd and technically he told me he's the one that gave us that awesome Riley to Ty Detmer excitement level, you know, thing.
Right.
He corrected me. The pronunciation is not Todd and it's actually Todd and D. D is his wife's nickname.
Oh, there we go.
But he said the family laughed at my terrible pronunciation of his handle. So
I like that you keep doing it. I hope that they enjoy that.
Todd and yeah. you know, I've had that problem with Drew Sky.
Oh my goodness. So, pretty clearly Drewski.
Yeah, very clearly Drewski.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, I know. But one guy I haven't had any problems with is
Sweeney.
At Bullishism.
No, oh, Bullishism, which really sets you're set up for failure with Bullishism.
That's true.
I think we've done a remarkable job of staying on the very safe side of that one.
Or we've edited some things out. But anyway, he asks on Twitter, one former Cougar that signed with an NFL team that we didn't mention was Jake Heaps going to the Jets.
No,
would you like to make predictions?
We didn't get into that.
No, it was on our agenda last week or the week before, I can't remember, but we blew right past it. But Matt, do you have any predictions about Jake Heaps on the Jets?
I have a couple things to say, okay. As you might imagine. I have some thoughts.
All right, okay? Share those.
A minute ago, we were talking about how tanking at the end of the season and not getting the number one pick, that was so Knicks, right? And
yes.
I think that was the phrase that was on Mike and Mike this morning. There was like, oh, that is such a Knicks thing to do.
Right.
Signing Jake Heaps is such a Jets thing to do.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it is just, it boggles the mind,
Does. It does. My mind is boggled.
But it is... I am shocked, but at the same time, I'm not at all surprised.
Yeah, you can't be really surprised by it.
You know, I wish no ill will on Jake Heaps. I don't. But he's not an NFL quarterback. I'm not even sure he's a Division I college
quarterback. He wasn't. I mean, he got beat out in three
different
places.
Well, I don't know. He played for half the teams in the division, so it's kind of hard to say that. But anyway, I don't think the NFL is the right place for him.
Well, so Matt, I look at their depth chart, okay? They have Geno Smith, obviously, and today the news broke. Shocker, there is no competition for QB preseason competition, okay? They have Ryan Fitzpatrick, okay? Journeyman quarterback's been a starter. Not the long-term answer. They have Matt Sims, also not a long-term answer, but they drafted Bryce Petty. So they have Geno Smith, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Bryce Petty. Jake Heaps is depth for training camp.
He's a camper.
He's a body. I mean, and a flyer, you know, because everybody falls in love with Jake Heaps when they see him throw the football, right? College scouts did that. The BYU football staff did that. Kansas football staff, Miami. I mean, he has some great physical skills. The problem is he's never been able to, and people can argue that you know, the coaching staff at BYU ruined him or whatever. I think everyone knows my opinion on that. I think that's baloney. But regardless, he hasn't proved he can actually play the position at higher than a high school level consistently. So, you know, I look at that and I say he's just a guy to go in there. Nothing more. All right, Matt. Final thing we're going to do today is we're going to draft some future opponents, Matt. So let's look at all of college football. Okay? Anybody you think BYU could play who is not currently on the schedule, they are eligible to be part of this draft. Okay?
All right.
And we've done this in the past, but it's been a long time. And actually, at least one of the teams that we talked about, and this was 2.5, maybe even 3 years ago, was LSU. And they are now on the schedule, right?
Yes.
So
game to be played in a neutral location not far from my home.
Yes, yes, yes. So that's, I mean, you know, dreams do come true, Matt. Dreams do come true.
Wow, look at that. Dreams come true here on the Rise and Shout podcast.
That's true. They do. They do come true. Okay, Matt. So, because I am magnanimous, I'm filled with magnanimity.
You love that word.
I love that word. It's a fantastic word. Teams that are not on there that you would like to be on there, fire away. First pick.
I believe that you were also magnanimous when we did this a few years ago.
I did.
And let me take the first pick.
I did let you take the first pick.
And I think I'm going to take the same team I took before.
Okay.
I want Bama.
I know you do. I knew you'd
I want Alabama.
Okay. Okay. I like it. I like it. It's a solid pick. Solid pick. Do you want them on a neutral field, or would you like to go play them there?
I think I want them on a neutral field.
So you're bold, but not that bold.
Hey, come on. Come on. Let's not get crazy now. Okay. Yeah. Serious.
Yeah.
But wouldn't that be great? I mean, that is right now, that is kind of that's the team that everybody's comparing themselves up against, right?
Yes.
That's the barometer.
Yeah.
And beating Alabama is what has, you know, was the feat for, you know, that would be, I mean, that would just be I don't even know how to describe it, but how cool would that be? Even the game, like that would just be a ton of fun.
Yeah, it would be awesome. It would be awesome. So, I agree with you. That's a great one. Let me see with my first pick in this draft, I select the Oregon Ducks.
Great choice.
I think in a lot of ways they are the West Coast. Not Bama's probably too strong, but they're certainly a measuring stick on the West Coast. They've got a great program. They've done a great job. BYU has played them, but it was a long time ago. You know, so there's not a lot of history between the schools. If only there's a place where I could find that out. CougarStats.com.
I think the last time BYU played Oregon, they still prominently featured Donald Duck on their uniform.
I think that's a likelihood. So
I think that was pre-Nike contract.
Pre-Phil Knight getting heavily involved in the program. But I think Oregon would be great. Neutral site or at their place, it's not particularly that important to me. So I pulled it up. Oh, 2006. That's right. We played them in 2006. I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
So we played them in 2006 and absolutely blasted them. Overall, the series is 3-3. Oh, look at that.
There we go. We need the rubber match.
Yeah. Yeah. Only three times, Oh, actually, just the one time since 1990, though. So, interesting. All right, I'm up again because
that's right. It's a snake draft.
We do a snake draft, Matt. We're going to each do three. My second pick in said draft is. You know, it's funny. Last time I had Nebraska as one of mine too, so we don't have to worry about that anymore. My next pick is Tennessee.
Tennessee, really?
Yeah. So
intrigued.
And I want to go to Tennessee. I think it'd be cool. I would like to play Tennessee. That would be a good one. SEC opponent, depending on where they are, their trajectory, maybe not so formidable as maybe some of the other and we have never played Tennessee. So it'd be a first time, which was one of the criteria I looked at. Obviously, I didn't do that with Oregon, but it's one of the factors I weighted. All right, who's your second pick?
See, mine is similar to yours, but I think is a slightly better team. Not to offend any of our relatives who are Vols fans. Team. But do you know what I think would be a great place to go see
Wagner.
A game?
Oh, we already got them. Go ahead.
I want to play Clemson on the road.
Oh, Clemson would be terrific.
I think that would be fun.
That's a fantastic choice.
Yeah, I think that would be a lot of fun. You know, there's a handful of places, venues that you'd really want to see as a college football fan. And for me, Clemson is definitely on that list.
Yes. Yeah. All right. And so then that was your second pick, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have one more.
Okay, my next pick, I'm going to take Baylor, actually.
Baylor? Nice choice. I like that choice.
I've always I enjoy watching Baylor football. I like the coach. I'd like them to play the game at Baylor because I could drive to it. But I think a road game in Texas is good, and I think Baylor would be a good program to play.
So I'm going to copy you in a way. And I'm going to pick the aforementioned Aggies that you hate.
Oh, come on. That's okay, because I totally copied you when I picked
two SEC teams I picked, but I would love to play there in College Station. I would. I think that'd be great. And though it's only three games, they're very memorable games against, of course, the bowl game against Texas A&M in 1990 was memorable only in a horrific way. But the 1996 game was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It was a pretty awesome game. So there you have it, Matt. Your list was Bama,
Clemson
and Baylor.
Baylor.
And my list was, who did I say?
You did Oregon.
Oregon.
Tennessee
and Texas A&M.
Texas A&M.
And I would like to honorable mention, but I would like to play Air Force again.
Yeah, I like Air Force. I'd take Navy.
I would like to play San Diego State, but only at home or neutral site, just so that we could beat up on them.
But you know who else is an honorable mention for me is Ohio State.
Yes, yes.
A game in Columbus I think could be a lot of fun.
Yes, and I would love for us to be able to, for a whole year, make fun of the Ohio State University.
The Ohio State University, not to be confused with whatever they're trying to differentiate from by emphasizing
Ohio State University. So, Matt, when do you think was the last truly special season for BYU?
You know, I feel like I always go back to and stick to the same season whenever we talk about this.
Yes, you do. Blah, 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 1996, blah, 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 blah.
Well, but seriously, that season was awesome.
That season was awesome. I don't know. I think 2006 and 2007 were pretty awesome. Finished the year ranked and all that. 2001, though it ended poorly, was pretty cool. We're going to, over the next few weeks, Matt, next few podcasts, I should say, we're going to take one of those seasons, one of those special seasons, and we're going to talk about what this current team can learn from that special team. So we'll start that over our next podcast, and we'll, I don't know if we'll go chronologically or you and I will just pick them, but that's something for you listeners to look forward to.
That's going to be good.
That'll be good. I think we can talk about some of these special seasons, and some of them had tough schedules too, though probably none of them September quite like this one, but we can talk through that. Well, Matt, do you have anything else you wanted to share with the listeners this week?
I do want to just real quick, you know, for the baseball fans out there, Bryce Harper was ejected again, was ejected tonight after what appeared to be arguing a strike call.
I believe technically he was ejected for not stepping back into the box.
Well, but it looks to me, I've gone back and watched this over and over again. It looks to me like he stepped out of the way while the umpire was yelling at the manager in the dugout. He told Harper to get back in the box. Harper was on his way back into the box. I've watched it over and over again to see
if he's stepping in,
and then he throws him out.
It's crazy.
After the game, Harper said that he did not understand why he was tossed, and then joked that he thinks that the umpire just missed his coffee this morning. And then said this, "I don't think 40,000 people came to watch the ump."
Well, and
that may result in some discipline.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't work in the league office, but my favorite part of the ejection was when the manager, Matt Williams, comes out and kicked dirt on home plate after he got kicked out.
That's awesome. I thought it was well done by Matt Williams. I thought if you're going to get thrown out, and at that point, he's already been thrown out.
Yes.
Give everybody their money's worth. It's entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Lou Piniella throwing a base, you know. As long as there's no touching of the umpires, you know, no physical abuse, yell, scream, kick dirt, throw bases, throw hats, I think it's great. And I think that umpire was I don't know what happened, but and nothing will happen. Everyone on Twitter's like, fire him, suspend. Nothing's going to happen. Behind the scenes, the league will probably give him a slap on the wrist for the reason you mentioned, which is, you can't have your best players getting thrown out of games unless they really deserve it.
That's right. And it appears to me like he was going to throw – he had already decided Harper was leaving that game.
The first thing Harper did that annoyed him – and the worst part about all this, if I'm Harper's manager, friend, coach, whatever, I'm going to tell him he needs to really chill out because the Nats need him and they're going to be in a playoff race all season, right?
But yeah, and he's been arguing balls and strikes a lot.
Way too much. But here's the thing. Every time I watch him and him argue a ball or strike, he's right. And the thing is, 20 years ago, no big deal, right? Because none of us knew if it was a ball or strike off TV, right? You can't tell on TV, and you definitely can't tell in the stands. But now, every person watching television and everybody in the stadium with a phone and can open up the MLB app knows if it was a strike or not. Like, there's no escaping. There's no escaping, Matt. From that, and Bryce Harper's in the zone. He knows if it's a ball or a strike.
He is seeing the ball very well.
Yes, he's seeing the ball very well. Well, great. We thank you all for downloading and listening. Check out CougarFan.com for all of your BYU sports news, and it's all right there every day, every morning for you to check out. Again, go to iTunes and give us a nice rating. We prefer 5-star ratings. Actually, that's the only rating we really like, but you can feel free to do whatever you want. It's a free country. And tell your friends, tell your neighbors. We will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!